Well, greetings, friends. My name is John O'Gwen, and for the last 30 years, I've served as a minister and teacher. And today we're going to be starting into a Bible study series on a survey of the former prophets. Now, traditionally, the books of the what we call the Old Testament have been traditionally preserved by the Jews in three parts or three sections, considered the law, the prophets, and the writings. The law consists of the first five books, the books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. The prophets consists of books that we normally think of as being prophetic, but it also consists, the prophets section also consists of books that we would normally think of as being historical. The prophets are divided up into two sections, what are called the former prophets and the latter prophets. The former prophets are Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings. The latter prophets are the major prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, and then the 12 minor prophets. Now, while we might think of history and prophecy as being two totally different things, the reality is that history and prophecy are exactly the same thing, simply seen from two different directions. If you're looking back, you're looking at history, and if you're looking forward, you're looking at prophecy. But ultimately, the factor that all of this has in common is that it is a reflection of what builds on God's law. God's law is the basis for the blessings and for the cursings. These are enumerated in the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. Now, we're going to start here with this section, a survey of the former prophets. We're going to go through those sections of the Old Testament, normally considered a historical books, the books of Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings. And as we survey the former prophets, we want to focus in particularly on taking a lesson from Israel's leaders. Because what we will see as we go through this survey is that there were times when things were going well and the nation was reaping blessings and benefits, and there were times when there were all sorts of calamities and problems and difficulties. And there are reasons why there are times when Israel was being blessed and was going up, and there are times when they were cursed and going down, and there are reasons for that. Now, I want to open our study with the book of Joshua, and we're going to start out on this. Moses had led God's people for 40 years. He had brought them out of Egypt and had brought them up to within sight of the promised land, but Moses died in the area that was east of the Jordan River, in the plains of Jordan, and he died. The nation of Israel, the 12 tribes, Joshua had been selected as Moses' successor, as the leader. They remained there in the plains of Jordan for 30 days. And then we open up here in Joshua chapter 1. We're told in Joshua 1:1 that after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Eternal spoke unto Joshua, the son of Nun. He said, Moses, my servant, is dead. He said, now I want you to arise and go over this Jordan. You and all this people, I want you to go to the land that I'll give you. Centuries before, the great God, the eternal God, the creator of the universe, had made a promise to Abraham, had promised that he would give to the descendants of Abraham an inheritance of a land. Now, through the lifetime of Abraham and his son Isaac and his son Jacob, that promises were not received. Eventually, Jacob and his family went into Egypt, and that family grew into a great nation. Ultimately, God raised up Moses to bring them out of Egypt. Now they're preparing to enter the promised land. So Joshua was told in verse 5 of Joshua 1, there's no man that'll be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with you. I will not fail you nor forsake you. One key thing for us to understand, this is the basis of the promises being fulfilled. God said, I will not fail you nor forsake you. Do you understand what that means, friends? God is neither unable nor unwilling to do what he said. I will not fail you. I'm not unable to accomplish what I say, nor will I forsake you. I'm not unwilling to do what I say. He told Joshua, verse 6, be strong and of a good courage. So God said, I am neither unwilling nor unable. I will not fail you nor forsake you. He told Joshua, he said, now what you need to do is to be strong and of a good courage. He told him in verse 7, reiterating this, be strong and very courageous that you may be able to observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. So God's blessing and God giving to Israel the things that he had promised was based upon their obedience. The book of the law, verse 8, shall not depart out of your mouth. Why does God want Joshua and why does he want his people to focus in on this book, this revelation, this fundamental revelation of God's way? He said, it's not to depart out of your mouth. You shall meditate therein day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written. Why? For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success. You see, God always gives us his law for our benefit. He says, if you observe to do this, it'll make your way prosperous. You'll have good success. My way is the way to everything good that you want. So he said, look, I've commanded you, be strong and very courageous. Don't be afraid, neither be dismayed. So often our fears can stand in our way of being able to accomplish and achieve what we're capable of doing. But our inability to somehow trust and have confidence in God, when our fears began to be the ruling, controlling factors in our lives, they prevent us from being able to follow where God leads and being able, therefore, to accomplish what God has in mind. One of the things we're going to see as we go through this series of the former prophets and we focus in on the leaders that God used through the history of ancient Israel and Judah, we will see the extent to which some men were ruled by fear and others were ruled and led by faith. So, God, through Joshua, instructed the people to get organized, to come on through, and they gathered the people together. And in verse 12, it addresses 2.5 tribes, the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. Manasseh was the only tribe that actually had two separate inheritances in two separate areas. You see, when Israel was led by Moses and they came up from the area of Kadesh Barnea and came up in what is now the nation of Transjordan, the area east of the Jordan River, 2.5 of the tribes, Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh, said to Moses, we like this area and we will take our inheritance here. And Moses said, well, that's fine, but your men have to come on across the Jordan and help everyone else subdue the land. And they said, that's fine. We don't object to that. So they agreed to do that, and now Joshua reminded them of that promise in verse 13, and the fact that God would ultimately, that they were to come and go forward until the Lord has given rest to the nation. Israel had been wandering 40 years. They'd been in slavery. They'd been wandering 40 years. Coming into the promised land and receiving that inheritance was entering into rest. But the rest that Israel entered into in the promised land was merely a type of the ultimate rest into which God's people may enter as the kingdom of God. The physical promises were a type of the spiritual promises. So they prepared to come on in. Now, as we come on down in chapter 2, we find that Joshua sent two men into Jericho. Jericho was the great citadel city of the Canaanites. It stood just west of the Jordan River, and it guarded the access to the land. So spies came in, and they came to Jericho to spy out the land. And in the course of that their arrival there, word got out. The king of Jericho found out that these men had come, and he was very concerned about that and wanted to capture them because the exploits of Israel and their subduing of the kings east of the Jordan, that news had already arrived. Now, they came to the to the place, to an inn run by a woman by the name of Rahab, known as Rahab the harlot. They came there, and we find that as word got out and Rahab heard this, she called the men and she said, look, the king is looking for you. He wants to destroy you. He wants to kill you. And she hid them on the roof of her house. She told the king's officers, well, they've come, but now they've gone. I don't know where they are. He left, or the officers left. Then she let the men out, let them actually down over the wall by night. And in the course of that, received a promise from them that when they came in and when they subdued the land, when they subdued Jericho, as Rahab knew that they would, Rahab understood that the God of Israel was the real God. She said, as we read in Joshua chapter 2 and verse 11, she said, the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. So she, moved by faith, she had heard these stories, she had heard the things everyone else had heard, but Rahab believed God. And as a result of that, she made a decision that from a human standpoint was putting her life in jeopardy, and yet she knew that the God of Israel is the real God. So they promised that they would deal kindly. She let them down, we're told in verse 15 of Joshua 2, by a cord through the window. Her house was right on the wall of the city. So she let them down, and they gave her a scarlet cord that she was to tie in the window so that when Israel invaded Jericho, that her family gathered there in her home would not be hurt or harmed in any way, because they would be easily recognizable by this cord that was there. So now, in Joshua chapter 3, Joshua rose up early in the morning, and they came to the Jordan River and stayed there right before they passed over. And he told the people that as they came to the Jordan, this was in the spring, and the Jordan was at flood stage. God is now preparing, as we see in Joshua 3, to magnify Joshua in the eyes of the people. God had worked great miracles through Moses, and now he wants them to understand that he is working through Joshua as well. So the priests were told to take the Ark of the Covenant that symbolized, symbolically, the very throne of God. Inside the Ark were the two tables of stone on which God had written with his own finger the Ten Commandments. Had been placed there within the ark. The priests bore the ark on staves, four priests, two in front and two behind. And the priests were to take the ark, bearing it on their shoulders, to walk up to the banks of the Jordan River, and when their feet touched the Jordan, Joshua said, God will perform a miracle. And that's exactly what we see. They were to take the ark and pass before the people. They came up to the Jordan, and they were to stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said to the children of Israel, verse 9, come here and hear the words of the Eternal your God. You shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you all of these Canaanite tribes. The ark of the Lord, verse 11, the ark of the Lord of all the earth passes before you into the Jordan. And so they took now 12 men out of each of the tribes, and when the soles of the feet of the priests came there into the Jordan River, the water stopped. And so it was as though an invisible hand held back the water, and the Jordan drained away. The priests walked out into the midst of the Jordan River. They stood there holding the ark, and all of the tribes of Israel came across. And they crossed the Jordan River through God's miraculous intervention and entered into the Promised Land. Well, next time we will take up the story here in Joshua chapter 4, and we'll see what happened after Israel crossed the Jordan River. And so, until next time, this is John O'Gwen for the Living Church of God.